This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 103. We're going to catch up on the latest cloud news and talk about web content management, recorded live November 11th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, AC.
How you doing, CJ?
Pretty good. Pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing good. It feels like ages since we last spoke.
I know. It was great seeing you last week in person. But unfortunately, we're back on Skype.
Yeah, we are. But it really wasn't ages. This is a Wednesday morning that we're doing this. And we did that on Sunday afternoon. So it was really just 3 days. Actually, it feels like yesterday to me.
Hey, man, I've missed you. I don't know what else to say.
I missed you too, man.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Yeah. So you're back in Florida, huh?
I am. Almost didn't make it. I had a nice little sprint. My connection was super tight yesterday due to an elderly woman falling during the boarding process in Seattle and having to wait for medics to show up. So we didn't leave for almost an hour and 15 minutes. But pilot came on and said, I'm going to try and fly this plane like I stole it.
Nice. And you made your connection, I hear.
I did. I did have to sprint. So I did get my speed work in. I'm training for a half marathon. So I got my speed work in. I got my weights in with a big backpack on my back. And I also got my hills workout in, which is running up the escalators in Atlanta.
Well, I'm just glad you made it. And I bet your family is too.
Oh, yes. Yes. They were very happy, especially the kids with the Minecraft shirts and stickers from the Microsoft store. So,
oh, yeah. I bet they loved it.
Yeah. They were not complaining. So how about yourself? Doing good today?
Yeah, really well. I'm unfortunately grappling with a couple of sick kids, though. They're kind of coming down with colds, and it's that time of the year in Seattle, so hopefully they'll punch through that pretty quick. But no, it's really good. I'm writing a bunch of node code right now and dealing with queuing and message busing and all that sort of stuff with AMQP and RabbitMQ and node and all that sort of stuff. So I'm getting my hands dirty.
Nah, that's cool, man. My head's been deep in the last day or so, sticking it deep in the whole Docker container thing. And holy crap, that is some really, really cool stuff.
It's pretty amazing.
I know we talked a very brief bit about it on the show last week, but we need to do a show on this though coming up. I mean, I know that, like we said last time, there's obviously we get an expert on the show, but I'd love to do it with just our two cents. And then we get the expert on to talk about containers. And it's like, basically, here's everything you guys got wrong.
Exactly. Somebody can correct us. And you know, we should do it back-to-back weeks so that people don't go off and do stuff that we say and then we get an expert in to completely contradict us.
Or even better yet, we should do it really soon so that someone can come in and correct this because I'm about to start working on a project where I'm going to use it. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Me too, man. Me too.
Did that with DocuDB the other day. So
nice. Yeah, I'm dockering up a storm right now as well. So
cool.
It's fun.
Yeah, man. Hey, I do have one little bit of update that has happened since we recorded on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, cool.
I fell into a pile of cash.
Nice.
Yeah. So I played DraftKings and made a few wagers. I really liked my lineup on Sunday morning, and I don't have huge expectations about this.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so I don't know if anybody sees, anybody that listens to this outside the US and people who are in the US that don't watch NFL football, but DraftKings is basically a way for you to do daily fantasy sports to where you can kind of make a few bets on the performance of players, and you get a score, and based on all the starting lineup you do, and you get a payout. And I happened to enter two contests, one where there were 2,500 participants, and another one where there was 250 participants, and I came in first place in both of them. So I'll be completely honest. I've got a wad of cash that is burning a hole in my pocket.
And you've got a gadget budget is what you're trying to tell me.
I really do. The wife was like going, you better not lose all that. I'm like, I'm not going to lose it. I'm going to use it, but I'm not going to lose it. So as a Mac guy, hey, get this. I'm actually seriously considering going and getting a Surface Pro 4.
Yeah, it's probably a cool idea. Like it's nice to have a native Windows machine just sitting around.
Yeah.
Right. I use a MacBook Pro and I have it in a VM. Like I have Windows 10 in a VM that I use pretty much daily, but I also have a Surface Pro 3 that I leave around that I have built with Windows 10 as well, just for those native moments.
Yeah, that's me. I mean, I was playing with the whole i5 versus i7, 8 gigs, 16 gigs. it won't be my primary machine. My MacBook is still going to be my primary machine, but I would like to have a native experience. I'm really sick of, really just sick of working inside of VMs. So yes, I'm looking. So hopefully this afternoon, head out to the Microsoft store, find out and cross my fingers that they actually do a same as cash, kind of try it out for 2 weeks and then you don't like it, bring it back and we'll give you your money back.
Yeah, I'd like to. I haven't actually held one of those machines yet, so it'd be interesting to take a look at. I looked at the Surface Book, but not the Pro 4.
Yeah, I did that when I was out in Bellevue. I ducked over in the Apple store and spent about 20 minutes playing with a MacBook and then spent about 20 minutes playing with the Surface Book and the Surface Pro 4 at the Microsoft store. It was not very comforting that the both Surface Pro 4s I was playing with were not very responsive, like they were locked up.
Mm.
And then the Surface Book is cool, but I'm looking for something, because I carry a MacBook, the only reason the Surface Book is really appealing, it's native Windows and the form factor is so small, smooth, so thin that it's like, it's not going to be that big of a deal.
Yeah, be easy to travel with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, so we've got some news to cover today, and then we're also going to get into a little bit of a discussion about web content management.
Sounds good.
And we have a listener question to address on that. So why don't we kick things off with some news? There's a little bit of interesting news that's happened in the Microsoft Cloud world since we last spoke that I thought we could briefly cover off, and then dive into the listener question and talk about WCM.
Sure, sounds good.
So the first piece of news is some news from Satya. He was in the UK and announced that Microsoft are going to open new data centers in the United Kingdom. So this is really interesting because of all of the recent developments around safe harbor laws and things like that around data sovereignty. And so Microsoft opening two new data centers, one near London and one in a yet-to-be-disclosed location, but also in the UK, right? Because they always do, for geo-redundancy and things like that, have two or more in the, not in the exact same location, but within, the same region, so to speak. So this came out on the 10th of November, and he announced that the Microsoft's going to open these two new data centers. It was Satya that gave the announcement. But what was really interesting is that he said that he would partner, or Microsoft would be partnering with another organization in the local geography to help run the data centers.
Hmm.
And this is kind of interesting because I think it's Microsoft helping distance itself from being an American company holding UK companies' data.
Hmm.
In the UK and being, I don't know enough about this, right? But yeah, sort of being at a little bit more of an arm's length from the data than would normally be, so that the US government can't spy on UK organizations. And the same, I think that was the same thing in Germany, which was the second piece of news, which was that, or the title of the article that you can find in Flipboard was Microsoft unveils German data plan to tackle US internet spying, where they're partnering with Deutsche Telekom, a German telecommunications provider, to run new data centers in Germany. So they'll be under control of Deutsche Telekom, not of Microsoft, but they'll run Microsoft services from there. And I guess the theory being that the US government can't get its hands on Europeans' data.
I saw that the part, the Germany thing, is that if they set up new data centers in Germany, they're going to be under the control of Deutsche Telekom.
Yeah.
So that really takes it away. In a sense, it's a Microsoft offering, but because it's run by another company, I'm guessing that kind of gets you around some of the legal things to where it's not a U.S. company doing it. So it's a German company that's actually running it, and that's more subject to the German laws.
Yeah, this is not the first time Microsoft has done this. So Office 365 in China, for example, is run by a Chinese company called, I think, ViaNet or Via21 or something along those lines. So it's run and operated, the data centers are run and operated by another company and things like that. So I guess it's a similar kind of arrangement to that. One of the interesting things is it said in the article, it said that technology analysts say this is a watershed moment, describing the maneuver as the first time a major U.S. tech group had accepted its inability to protect customer data from U.S. governmental overreach.
That's a hell of a statement.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. So it'll be interesting to see if others follow suit or if this really benefits Microsoft. I could imagine for enterprise customers, it's kind of a really important deal, right? Because they want to know, is the US government going to be able to get access to their data? And even if it resides in the UK. And I don't think that's entirely clear at the moment, and this is another step towards being able to guarantee that.
There's an interesting quote in here. It says by an analyst at Gartner, Karsten Kasper, says, "I think Microsoft have come to the conclusion that they can't get away from being a U.S. company. I find it more honorable than others who try to move their data centers to Europe to appease customers. But how good is it to have data centers in those countries if you can access it from abroad with no particular problem?" So like you said, it's putting it under. So here we go. Here's the details of it. Under Microsoft German agreement, T-Systems, a Deutsche Telekom subsidiary, will operate two new data center facilities in the country that will open for business in late 2016. They will be used solely to house information on Microsoft European customers who will also be asked to pay more to store data this way. It's interesting. I think I read somewhere where the two UK data centers plus the German data centers brings the total data centers for Azure to it's either 26 or 28. I wasn't sure if the 26 number only factored in the UK ones and didn't factor in the German ones, but 26 or 28 worldwide now.
That's amazing. Good coverage. I think this is just it's a smart move. Who knows if it'll hold up legally or what the deal will be when the US government want access to a particular company's data that sits in, say, Office 365 that Microsoft operates. But it seems to be like another tool in the belt, so to speak, of protecting that data. It's yet to be seen whether it'll hold up and be effective, but it would be at least another hurdle towards legally getting access, surely.
Agreed.
Yeah, so I think German data centers and two new UK data centers, which that's really exciting. I think that's really good, and gives customers more choice. And this is actually a really interesting leverage point for Microsoft of differentiation, right? That Microsoft really putting a lot of eggs in this basket of providing geographical or regional choice to customers that you don't get with a lot of other providers in quite the same level of granularity, at least. It's a nice competitive advantage.
Yeah, that's true. Cool. Good stuff.
Cool. So there's another one. A couple of episodes ago, or a few episodes now, we did I think it was episode, was it 98? We did with Andrew Liu from the DocumentDB team on DocumentDB in Azure, which was a NoSQL service available in Azure. I came across a really interesting blog article by a guy called Vladimir, and I'm not even going to try and mess up his last name. Begins with a K and ends in a V. But we've linked off in the Flipboard, and it's entitled SQL versus NoSQL. You do want to have a relational storage by default. And I thought the article was great at just sort of walking through some of the basic differences between and some of the misunderstandings between relational databases and NoSQL databases. So things like, are NoSQL databases really schemaless? You know, what are the schema migrations like with a NoSQL database? Some of these things we covered in our podcast with Andrew, like what happens when the data model changes? How do you deal with that in a NoSQL system? But I thought that the article was interesting and had a few really cool points to bring up. So I thought it was a great short read, maybe 5-minute read or something. And like I said, we've linked off to it from our Flipboard if you want to read it. But I just thought it was a good follow-up to that podcast that we did the other day.
Yeah, I admit I haven't read this. Like our other news articles, I was stuck in all-day meetings since our last review of Monday and then flying all day Tuesday. And then hands full this morning with kids today. So I haven't read this yet. I'm scanning through it though. It looks really interesting. I like some of the points he's making about, like you said, NoSQL database is really schemaless. And does it mean that your code is totally cool if you try to make queries against your document DB collection if you just went from a field called name and you split it out into first name, last name. If you don't change your code, what happens?
Yeah.
I think it really just boils down to, it seems like it does a really good job of going through and explaining that stuff. I like that concept though. It does make the changes to your schema though easier to make because you're not changing the actual data store. It's more you deal with it in code.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you trust your DBAs more or do you trust your developers? Dun, dun, dun. Well, we're devs, so of course you trust devs.
Yeah. And of course, you know, like everything else, man, it's so many of us wear the same hat now where
it's true.
Your dev, your DBA, your DevOps, your security. So only the massive organizations are going to have dedicated for each one of those things. But I don't know. I mean, I know there's a lot of big enterprises, but I don't run into a lot of people these days that I'm just a DBA or I'm just a web dev or I'm just an infrastructure guy.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly used to, but I can't say I do frequently right now. But that could also be a sign that I'm just not talking to the same sort of companies.
I don't know. I mean, something like, you know, you look at it, you see people that are devs are working with stuff like Docker or working with things like VMs in Azure or working with, you know, how to go through and do different, you know, components and stuff inside of Azure. It just seems like the responsibilities are being pushed farther down to the devs.
Yeah.
And things are more mixed. And this whole concept of DevOps is just the catch-all term of, hey, jobs are changing.
That's true. Okay. So that was the news. A couple of interesting things there, data centers and a bit of bits and pieces on SQL versus NoSQL. But why don't we get into the meat and potatoes of today, which is moving on to the topic of web content management and a bit of an update on that. We had a listener question. Do you want to go through that, and we'll use that as a sort of a lead into the topic?
Absolutely, yeah. So this one's from Charlie Lee. Charlie, thanks for sending in your question. Charlie's from the UK, and he submitted the question at the beginning of October, and just October was a busy month for us, so we're just now getting to it. But Charlie says, hey, AC and CJ, I'm a SharePoint consultant working for a Microsoft Gold partner based in Birmingham in the UK. I got a question for you. Given the history of WCM within Microsoft, and the context of at the time, it was a recent blog post that I had about the SharePoint developers no longer relying on SharePoint as a dev platform, but as a service provider. Back to Charlie's question. How do you think I should be advising my customers to best use a Microsoft stack to provide their WCM? At a time when the Office 365 removed public websites as a feature, this felt to me like the first public evidence that Microsoft was removing content management as a core feature of SharePoint. However, there does not appear to have been any further moves along these lines yet. Equally, no significant investment has been seen in this feature with Office 365 or SharePoint 2016. Is it better to build a custom WCM solution with a separate CMS, such as Orchard, and just push-pull content to SharePoint when needed? Or is it safe to fully build WCM solutions in SharePoint, either on-prem or in 365? I guess the answer is going to be tied to branding and customizations, as WCM always leads to make it nice and shiny requirement. And that is where SharePoint is ceasing to become a viable option going forward, specifically in 365. I think it would make an interesting conversation for the show. Keep up the good work, guys. The show is awesome, and I'm looking forward to episode 100. You guys are the best. Absolutely awesome. Okay, I threw a little bit of that in myself. But thank you. Thank you very much, Charlie. Hey, great question. And this is funny because so last week I was at the MVP Summit, and I know that I can't – obviously the MVP Summit's all under NDA and stuff, but at one point, it was funny because somebody asked a question around WCM, and I was like, let's not focus on WCM or something like that. Just my opinions. I'm not saying anything what Microsoft said around that, right? So let's first kind of take a step back, and let's kind of digest Charlie's question, and let's look at where we are today. And yes, Microsoft has, in the past, they've had a WCM offering, a web-based CMS offering inside SharePoint.
To be fair, it's still there, right?
Yes, it's still there. We still have it today. It's not been removed. It's not been deprecated. It's not been handicapped or anything like that. We had a public-facing internet site on Office 365, which was not WCM. It was really just simple, like a team site, but a public version of it. That is, Microsoft has said that they're removing that. I think it might still be in 365, but you got to move all your stuff off of that within a certain amount of time. So
yeah, there's a timeline for that being removed.
Right. So as far as 365 is concerned, there is no .com internet facing WCM option. So you said in your question, Charlie, you said you think it really comes down to the branding. And to me, that's not where I think it really comes down to. So I think that when you first look at this, there's really a bunch of different angles or different vertices that you got to look at with this. So first, is your site going to be public or private? Is it internal facing or is it internet facing? And this one's really easy. If it's internet facing, don't use SharePoint. It's done. SharePoint is not made to be internet facing. It's always been kind of a bolt-on or an afterthought. And in my mind, I mean, yes, I advocated it quite a bit. Yes, I spent a lot of time in this place. But to me today, I think that there's better options. If you're doing an internet-facing .com site and you want it to be a WCM-based site or a web content management-based site, you really don't just want web content management. You really want a whole digital marketing solution, to me. And that's where SharePoint really falls down. It doesn't really work all that great with it. There's add-ons you can do, but that's not what it's designed to do.
Yeah, I think so. The short story for me is, yes, there are WCM features still in SharePoint today that were introduced back in 2007 when Content Management Server came together with SharePoint. But And they've evolved all the way up to the 2013 release, which was a number of years ago now. But the world has moved quite significantly on from in terms of capabilities and the things that you need to be able to do with a WCM platform since then. And honestly, you could build a public-facing website with SharePoint today, not in Office 365 though. So you're going to have to host it somewhere, either on-prem or in Azure or something like that. But honestly, if you're looking at a fairly sophisticated public-facing website, there are things that you're not going to get in the box in SharePoint that you're going to need. And the world's kind of moved on in terms of capabilities and needs. And so you're probably not honestly looking at SharePoint Server, at least with its current capabilities, for public-facing internet sites anymore.
I would agree. Now, let's say if you're going to go internal, is SharePoint WCM still a good option? Yeah, it is. I don't think the one part of your question, and I may be splitting hairs here, but you did say one part of your question, Charlie, where you said when they remove public websites as a feature, it felt to you like this is the first evidence that Microsoft was removing content management as a core feature of SharePoint. I wouldn't say it like that.
Definitely not, yeah.
I would say that's the first evidence of Microsoft saying we're out of the .com business.
Yes.
That to me is what that says.
Yep.
As far as enterprise content management, Microsoft is huge in that space. SharePoint is huge in that space. It will continue to be, but that's an internal play. That's not a public play. So I don't think that's the case at all. Would I consider using WCM for a corporate intranet? Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's a really good differentiation, because when people say WCM, I mean, I've argued this for a long number of years, that when people say WCM, everybody leaps to .com, right? Or you know, public-facing internet sites. But I honestly believe that the vast majority of WCM that's going on in the world is internal in organizations. Hmm. And everybody's got an intranet, right? Or at least the vast majority of people have an intranet.
Do you?
Not yet. Our intranet is a whiteboard.
I have one. It's just a single team site, but it's okay.
There you go. So yeah, I think internally, absolutely, WCM is still super important. Most people still want intranets and a central place for your organization to publish content and put news out and links to the tools in your organization and directory of places to go and places to find things. And so I definitely don't think SharePoint is trying to get out of that game. They still want to be the portal provider of the enterprise.
I think that's a good distinction. I mean, they really do. Now, let's take this whole thing. So, you know, what would you do if you wanted to go .com? What kind of options do you have available? Now, there are tons of options in this space. But like you said, Microsoft, you're coming from the angle of Microsoft Gold Partner. Let's talk about the Microsoft stack. How would you do this? What options are available to you? So to me, doing .com, I take SharePoint off the table. So what are your other options that are available to you? Now, there's one. You kind of have to go in, you know, what kind of approach do you want to take with this? And it's like with any other product. Do you build? Do you buy? There's one that I'm not as familiar with, but it's one that I would definitely take a look at called, how do you pronounce it? Umbraco?
Umbraco, yep.
So I know it's on .NET Stack, but I don't know much about it. I'm going to go in two different angles with this. So let's say you wanted to build your own, right? Or you wanted to not build like custom build, but you wanted it's less kind of out of the box. There's a really good open source platform available to you called Orchard. It's Orchard CMS. It is actually backed by Microsoft. It's part of the Microsoft Open Tech Group, which is the open source foundation. There are people that are dedicated at Microsoft. That's their full-time job in managing Orchard. Actually, I was fortunate enough to meet the guy last week. This, I know a lot of people that use Orchard. I use Orchard on my that hosts a multi-tenant instance for me. And a lot of people would look at this and they'd say, yeah, but is it enough to host a big company? Let me give you one little bit of evidence that I knew this was the case before, but I didn't have the real details behind it. If you're familiar with the blogs at Microsoft, so MSDN and TechNet blogs, these are hosted by Orchard. These are all on the Orchard platform. Orchard is hosted in Azure. It is all done based on a single website instance. It does not scale out at all. Well, sorry, Orchard does scale, but they're not scaling it at all. It hosts 800 blogs and they're doing it. I can't remember what the instance size it was on the website itself, but they have some out of the box caching that they're using. They're taking advantage of Azure websites. They're taking advantage of storage for the caching as well. So everything is file-based storage and they're serving up 800 blogs, all each of them separate multi-tenant, each of them managed and owned by their own respective owners. And it's all being done using, I think they're only spending about $300 or $400 a month on their hosting for Orchard with Azure. And there's tons of, the cool thing about Orchard is that there's tons of add-ins that you can do. So just like SharePoint, we have features. Orchard's got a concept called modules, which are like plugins. Tons of stuff you can add here from, you know, Azure App Insights, or I guess they're called Visual Studio Online App Insights or whatever. That gives you good insight into your application. There's a good module that ties into this to show you server-side performance, client-side performance. You could use Google Analytics. You can use Optimizely. There's tons and tons of add-ons they've done that people have added to this to make things really, really performant and make Orchard really just hum. So I know this is also the thing that hosts dev.office.com. Is another really popular site.
Yep, a bunch of public-facing internet sites that Microsoft produce.
Yeah,
done on Orchard. Orchard's great for quite simple sites, I think. But there's a lot of things that it doesn't include as well. So, you know, for example, it doesn't have A/B testing out of the box. You've got to add something to it to do it, or another tool to do it. Complex publishing workflows doesn't have that. So you got to, if you want some sort of content publishing pipeline, got to either build that yourself or add something to do that. So from a, you know, pure horsepower CMS point of view, it's pretty lightweight, but that's also a good thing. It may or may not suit your needs.
Yeah, it's easy to extend. It's easy to customize. You can take this really any direction you want to go, because you can do things with just use your familiar .NET skills. Crack it open and start having to go at creating your own modules and stuff like that. So it does. There is a bit of a learning curve in getting into understanding how everything works. But I'll tell you, I mean, the more time I spent with it, I really like how you feel like you're doing more content assembly with Orchard than you do with something like SharePoint. So
it feels more like Content Management Server 2002.
It feels a lot like Content Management Server 2002. But to that, it does have a lot more content assembly kind of features to it that I like.
For sure. Hey, let's also not forget about .NET Nuke.
Yeah, let's do forget about that.
Yeah. Hey, it's still alive and thriving, I hear. Yeah. I haven't done anything with it for years, but it's pretty popular still.
It is. It's pretty popular. I guess I to me, it feels like it's kind of past its prime. Mm. But I mean, there are some really popular sites that use it. If you're in the SharePoint space or the Office 365 space, you may be familiar with a company called IT Unity. Their site is based on a customized umbrella of .NET Nuke. So somebody built this whole piece on top of it for like the digital marketing and stuff that you sit on top of it. Mm. Works great for them. It's been going strong for 2 years and very customizable. So it's impressive.
Yeah. There's a few good choices for the Microsoft stack folks out there, which is really what we're getting at. Then we can move on to like the fully sort of commercial products, right? And I think there's one that really stands out.
Yeah, I would agree. So if I'm a Fortune 500 and I'm looking for something that's much more out of the box, that's got a lot of digital marketing stuff baked into it, I'm probably going to first go with Sitecore. I've sat down and seen two or three demos of Sitecore. If I was in the .com business again, so it's kind of funny because this WCM space, I started with this when I got out of college doing a bespoke CMS, and then kind of went off, did something else for a little while, and then came back out into CMS with 2002 with Microsoft. And that's how I got into the whole SharePoint and WCM space. If I was going to sit down with a customer and I was a CMS consultant and I was going to go talk to someone like a Coca-Cola or, you know, a big Fortune 500, the first thing I'm going to look at is Sitecore. The demos I've seen blow me away, not just from the content management. Content management's not that hard to figure out. It's in the publishing workflow, not that hard to figure out. It's how you do the entire management of campaigns, how you do the entire management of true digital marketing, really understanding your audience, targeting customized content to that audience. A lot of that's right out of the box in Sitecore.
Yeah, that's very sophisticated. It's a big nut to crack, right? So this is not a install and you've got a site, right? This is a project.
Yeah.
You're probably going to buy the product. You're probably going to need to learn how to use it, obviously, from a development point of view. But you're probably going to want to hire a services company who understands how to do this stuff with Sitecore to help you with it. So it's not like a simple deal. It's a sophisticated product that addresses a lot of different needs, and it'll run in Azure too.
Yeah.
So you can run it in Azure, you could run it on-prem, obviously scales extremely well, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's sort of the opposite end of the spectrum from Orchard.
Yeah, I would agree, yeah. So Orchard is free and open source, but just like every free and open source product, some stuff you got to take a look at and how you're going to manage it. But there is the other side too with Orchard is that there is a, unlike Sitecore, which you will always go grab yourself and you will find, you will have to host it yourself. Now it does host very well in Azure. It also has some really nice integration with SharePoint. So you can use SharePoint for some of your, of some workflow stuff and then publish content into your site using Sitecore. So they've done a really good job with that. On the Orchard side, you know, it's a free product. There is a company that has been spun up that does do hosting of Orchard for you on a multi-tenant instance that they have. I forget the name of it off the top of my head. I can go search for it in just a minute, but it's relatively new and they host everything in Azure. And actually a lot of the multi-tenant updates have come, improvements have been made to Orchard from this company. For example, pulling things like the index that you get for search with Orchard has been moved out of the file store and moved over to a blob store so it can be shared across multiple instances.
Gotcha.
Same thing with the settings and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. They've done a really good job with Orchard. It's gotten I would definitely look at like versions 1.9 and above that have been really built specifically with Azure in mind.
Nice. Hey, well, I've got to say, like wrapping this topic up, I still very fondly look back at your book on web content management and SharePoint. and you know, it is kind of like the web content management with SharePoint Bible still to this day. And for those who are doing WCM, either publicly or not, right?
Yeah.
Still very relevant. And it's I still have it up on my shelf. Hey, well, that's excellent. I see we covered a bit of ground today, so appreciate the conversation. And for those interested in WCM and Azure Data Centers, hopefully this was useful to you.
Absolutely, man. It's good fun.
Excellent. All right. Cheers, AC. We'll catch you next week.
Cheers, man.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.